You are listening to the podcast of the Attention Young Choreographer Series 2023. Artistic direction, Chris Standfest. Co-funded by the European Union in the frame of the project Lifelong Burning, Futures Lost and Found. Today's guest is Sebastiano Singh. The work of Sebastiano, a Vienna-based choreographer and performer, has long been occupied with making space for big emotions. His piece, Mathieu, was first developed in a turbo residency at Impulstanz Festival 2022. Following its premiere in VUK Vienna's project space, it was then presented at Schauspielhaus Vienna in the frame of Attention. In his conversation with writer Sean Pfeiffer, Sebastiano discusses the creative potential of Guilty Pleasures and a collaboration with dancer Hugo Le Brigand and musician Ernst Lima. He also opens up about how he learned to stop worrying and love the term of Tanztheater.
Hi, first of all, thank you for being here, Sebastiano.
Hello.
It's been 3 weeks since the festival and, what, 6 weeks since your residency?
Yeah, more than a month already.
And your showings, but you're local in Vienna, so you've been basically with us for the entire time, and I feel like I saw you at like every performance, and we talked about a lot of them. It's far like from your first contact with the festival. You've been you were part of DanceWeb, I think, in 2021.
Right? Yeah,
and then you developed this piece partly within a turbo residency in 22, right? So you've
Actually, it was my fourth time.
Okay.
That I'm at Impulstanz, because the first time was in 2019. I was a participant in the Atlas program, and then 21 DanceWeb, and 22 we had the residency. And for me, the festival is really an important anchor in the entire year in Vienna. It's a very important period, and I'm always looking forward to it. Before, always as a audience member or like doing workshops, but now really being part of it was a dream coming true this year.
You had the turbo residency last year where you developed a piece, and then now you had this 2 week residency. Did you use it for rehearsals, or did you work on something else? So how did you use these 2 weeks specifically?
We used it really for rehearsals, and because the piece is very it affords a lot of work, let's put it like that way. And we are very precise in what we are doing. So we really used the time to come back to the piece, because we premiered, the world premiere was in March this year in Vienna. And since that time, we did not play. It was good to use this time for coming back without stress. That was also beautiful that we had this studio where we could enter whenever we want to prepare then for the shows. And the second week, we used to develop our public moves class, because we were invited also to teach there, and we got really excited about that. It was also a challenge to create something, a program that is accessible for everyone. And basically we used the second week to research what could we do, and it was great. We had this spot in front of Museumsquartier. We worked with Schlager music also there, which was part of Mathieu as well, to deal with this specific German genre of music. And it was funny. There we really went for the guilty pleasure. We didn't, because in the piece Mathieu, we transformed the entire idea about what Schlager could be. And there we really used the Schlager. So it was almost like an Ibiza party or Ballermann. It was amazing, because people were really like, and I found very nice pumped up versions, not just original versions, but really those that people usually use at those places to really party. So we had a lot of fun, and it went quite well.
I mean, you mentioned Schlager. Now you coined kind of like the term dark Schlager in regards to your piece, Mathieu. Could you perhaps talk about that a little bit? Because it is like there is one Schlager song being played in the piece, but otherwise it's like very, it's very intense and it is very dark. And like, how do these two worlds meet kind of for you?
For me, when I start to work on a project, I mean, it always starts with obsession. And I work with obsession. And in that period, I was really obsessed with this type of music and with the world around it. And the whole cosmos of Schlager music. And then for me, it was somehow clear that actually, even though we created this catchy term, dark Schlager, the piece itself should not deal with the genre in a way that this piece is about Schlager music. This was a starting point, questioning more like who's enjoying this type of music, why are people enjoying that, when do they listen to that, and that was a starting point to dig into deeper stuff that I'm basically always interested in, are human emotions and especially escaping reality, having desires, and this very kitschy term of Sehnsucht in German that I do not even know how to, longing maybe, it's melancholy. And then we found one Schlager song that we really loved, all of us, Hurra, wir leben noch, hooray, we are still alive. And so this state then really to have one of those songs, but my idea is always to open the facade and look what's behind.
Yeah, what I found really interesting about the piece was how like it is in a way like very it is very theatrical, and it is very almost like there's an artificiality to a lot of it, to the movement, to the way you speak, to I mean, you're a trained actor, right? So you come from theater, and I feel like there are very like elements in the piece, in the way that I feel like each one of you is almost like playing a character or something, or playing like a heightened version of them perhaps.
Yeah, it's a bit like an in-between state. It's not us being on stage as a private person, but it's also not like a fake persona that is created in a more like traditional way, like in acting when you would create a character. It's also not that, it's somehow in between. Yeah, so we highlighted, really we went for the decision to really highlight the qualities we are usually using, which is Ernst Lima, who's a sound artist and also visual artist. She was responsible for the sound design and also for live. She had like a live vocal scene, a live guitar solo. So we really went for that in her case. And with Hugo, who's a trained contemporary dancer, we went for dance. And in my case, as a trained actor, I used voice and dealing with poetic texts. And we wanted to see like, it's basically almost like the idea, what is your favorite song? This was like kind of, if you would ask that question, it's kind of similar that we then went for that. What's your favorite way of expressing yourself emotionally? And so that's the background somehow why we then clearly went for this division. We do not have scenes where like it's like not mixing up that much. Everyone stays with their own favorite song in that sense, or favorite way of expressing.
I think that's perhaps the thing that was like most surprising to me in a way, because it's like it's also like a very like almost like isolating way of presenting your art or something, because you don't, like you say, like you don't merge these like theatrical elements like with the musical elements or the dance elements, but you like you put one next to the other. Like you really have like Hugo the dancer, Ernst the musician, and you the poet or the actor in a way.
We had moments where, I mean, during the rehearsals I tried to also do stuff together. And actually, yeah, I didn't like it for this piece because isolation is very important for me in this piece, and also loneliness. Loneliness is also one of these core topics I'm deeply interested in when I work. So it's always somehow also there. And yeah, for me, I really wanted to have this isolation. And then in the dramaturgy, how the scenes are put together, that there are this clear theatrical going on stage, off stage moments, and then the stage is also empty somehow in between for a while. And this becomes also something that tells our own story itself for me personally. And the feedback of the audience then also was already in March that for many people it was very triggering, and some for some even almost unbearable to have this constant coming, going, emptiness in between. And I really liked that. So this was somehow, I just followed my own feeling of how I want to keep the free people on stage somehow isolated, because we talked a lot about living in small spaces. It's a very personal experience I had in my life to live in a overcrowded, super small apartment. And how can you escape? Where can you dream? And that was always a thing, like this idea of having your headphones on and being in the bathroom, or I don't know, in the kitchen where no one was in that specific moment. So this is something that also comes with this thing, like, where to find a space, a place where I can be alone also for this try. It's always we always talked in the rehearsals about this idea to try to escape reality, but you're always on the edge of not making it. Or are you making it? And the moment when you reflect about it, it's already too late, because then you're back into your head. So this was kind of a thing that we dealt with during the creation period.
Yeah, I feel like there's also like this like push and pull in a way, because it's like it has like very like absurdist elements, like in the text, but also in the way Hugo moves, for example. It's like it's this push and pull between like escaping like the reality, but not escaping like the feeling the reality produces in a way, like not like pushing away the loneliness, but kind of like diving into it, or like giving it more space in a way, like finding like a way to be alone and not like resisting resisting it in a way. And then at the same time, like it's, yeah, in a way it's a very dark piece, but it's also like a very comedic piece. Like I feel like your texts are very funny at some points, and then like Hugo's whole like presence has like a almost like a Marcel Marceau, Charlie Chaplin kind of energy in some points. Was like each part like conceived by the person doing it, or was that like very like interwoven in a way?
I would say we created this cosmos together. So this was kind of the thing that we had in common. And then I had intentions while creating, but not always telling the others. So for me, humor or a certain lightness, sometimes it's a very important element to not take yourself too serious, or to not do something that is like hyper depressing, or like this is, yeah, not my thing. So I personally, my personal experience is from being both on both sides, either creating a piece as a choreographer or director, or being on the other side and finding stuff as a performer for others. The moment when this idea comes, now we're gonna be humoristic or funny, most of the time it doesn't work. So I never talk about that in during rehearsals. I never said to Hugo, for example, now you are like this or like that, because I thought it would block then, or the person then would start to control this whole thing. Because, yeah, I had it in mind and things were coming. And of course, everyone has their own sense of how a situation is perceived by the audience and how people react. I need a lot of trust when I work with people, that they trust me what I'm doing, and I can trust them that they trust me. So, I mean, this basic idea, and in that sense, it really went well together because we trusted each other. And until one day before, or 2 days before the premiere, I constantly changed also the which scene will be after the other. And when we rehearsed, for someone from outside, it must look very chaotic because I'm doing this and that, this and that. And no one, even my other two performers, until the day before the general rehearsal, they didn't know how the piece will be, because if you change the sequence, or like the you create a different path of how you would go through this world. So basically, yeah, it's like if you draw a picture of an apartment, and yeah, you start where there's the kitchen, there's the dining room, the bedroom, the bathroom, and you can create a different apartment by flipping them or combining them, merging them, separating them. And this is basically what I did until the day before the premiere. And so, yeah. And certain things are funny or humoristic, almost comical, if you put it in a certain combination. And yeah, I mean, there's one scene where there are two people on stage, and these two things that they're where Ernst Lima is performing her vocals and Hugo is doing a certain movement repetitively, we rehearsed this different separately, and I tried out many different things that are happening at the same time, and we ended up with doing this. But this material, what Hugo is doing, it was not, now slap your ass, because that would be funny, a funny contrast. It came out from an entire other material that we were rehearsing. So it's really this, not just putting scenes differently together, but also we have a huge pool of movement, almost like a repertoire where we choose them, or I choose, let's try this, let's do that. And yeah, and things are happening.
I really like that scene because, I mean, it is funny in a way, but it's also like almost like very sad, because it felt so clearly like they were on stage together, but they weren't on stage together or something. Like they were still like in their own worlds, not only in the way that they like I feel like it's almost like very difficult to be on stage together in like one piece and not like projecting a kind of connection.
Yeah.
And they kind of like resisted that in a way that I've really liked. Do you feel like there was like a difference in perhaps in the reception, but also like in the way you performed it between your premiere? Where did you do your premiere in Vienna?
In Vuk Project.
Oh yeah.
Projektraum, and this is not a classical theater.
Yeah.
It's like a white cube space that looks like an old factory space, like huge glass windows on both sides, but also columns in the middle of the space, old wooden floor. It looks beautiful, but to do a piece there, a frontal theater piece, it's actually a nightmare. So it was quite challenging to adapt the space back in time, and yeah, and then I was super happy to have the possibility to bring that piece to a real theater in that sense. And yeah, I was super happy to show it at Schauspielhaus, where we had a real classical setting. And it's a frontal piece. Also in Projektraum, it was frontal. Almost for me, for my test, back in time, they were almost too close because we were so close with the audience. And the loneliness and this isolation and the sadness and the brutality in it was much stronger for my perception at Schauspielhaus. So that was for me, yeah, a very beautiful opportunity to explore that also. And the theatricality in the classical theater setting in Schauspielhaus also allowed us to really to take some stuff away that we had in the original world premiere version in Projektraum, because there we were like, we didn't have this possibility to go on and off stage. We had to hide behind those columns. And of course, the audience could still feel that we were there. And some of them, they could all also see us a bit. And when I adapted the show for Schauspielhaus, I tried that as well. But it didn't work at all because it looked very, it was very interesting there. It looked like very voyeuristic. It told a really different story. So that's why I decided at Schauspielhaus to really have this dramatic going off through the stage door on the left and right side.
Yeah, also just like this like very conscious decision of like leaving the space to the next person, like really leaving it and almost like giving up control in that moment, even though of course like you choreographed it and you know what's gonna happen, but there's still like an element of like I had my moment, now you have your moment. It's funny also because I feel like a lot of the attention artists are generally like oftentimes they struggle with the Schauspielhaus like frontality, the frontality of it, because like a lot of like dance pieces or performance pieces that are more like perhaps influenced by visual arts or something that like a lot of performance has been like more like turning to visual arts as like an influence than to theater. This year, like there were like two pieces that were very like theatrical, I think, like yours and then a Fugue 4 as well. And I was like thinking a lot about like how these like about these terms, like what's a performance and what's a theater piece, like what's a play, like is it important to have these names? Because like I, for myself, I find sometimes that it's like there's a lot of talk about like leaving these like terms behind, but I, for myself, I find them sometimes helpful or even like necessary, like to have a clear understanding of what it is in order to then perhaps go beyond it or like expand the term. Like, I don't know, do you think about these terms as well, like for you, like coming from theater?
Yes, I do. And for this piece specifically, it was the first time that I reconnected to my long year. I don't know, I used the frame at the term Tanztheater. This is what I'm now confidently say also about my work. It's Tanztheater, and it was a long process also coming from theater, then trying some stuff that was really I did shows in white cubes, really, where the audience was close, and it was also made for that. But I really always felt like, ah, something for myself. It's not 100% the way how I want to express myself. And for quite a while, I was dealing with this idea about guilty pleasures during the pandemic. And there were a lot of articles in different newspapers about guilty pleasures, mostly related to Netflix shows and stuff like that. And then I always ask myself, okay, why guilty, or why are people feeling ashamed or guilty about certain things? And I realized that I had that in my own field, that I felt kind of ashamed to say like, ah, what I'm doing or how I see it myself, it's Tanztheater, because it doesn't have this contemporary touch anymore. Well, it's something that it's almost seen like a historical genre. And the same, yeah, because to come back to your question, performance, I would say like everything is right now or nowadays can be a performance, which is great on the one hand, but also it's a bit confusing to the audience and to everyone. So I like this classical terms. If the person feels fine with it, who's doing that, I think. I know also people who are fighting against labels and who do not like that at all. But in my case, I feel very happy and I feel even like more free nowadays to say like, ah, what I'm doing is Tanztheater. And there are people who love it, people who hate it. And that's for me fine. And I personally find it more honest for myself.
Yeah, I think it has also something to do with like trust and belief in a way, like in the form, like believing form is flexible in a way, and like believing in theater, for example, and in the possibility of like doing a lot of different things within the frame of theater without having to call it something else. I find that, like, personally almost like exhilarating sometimes to see, okay, that is theater and they call it theater, but it's very different from things that I've already seen. Yeah, there's also a very different art form, a discipline that it's also like a big influence or a big part of your piece, which is poetry. But it's your poetry, and it's your poetry from, I think, 2011, right? Which is like a long time ago in a way. So I was really wondering, like, how did that happen? Like, how did you like stumble upon these texts again? And did you know immediately that they were like important, or like they could be a part of something?
Actually, no. It happened more like this piece is a lot about. I mean, now my personal, like, artistic, let's put it like that. It was a big step for me, or a big milestone. And to first of all, to say, like, what I'm doing, I call it Tanztheater, and I do this in that way because this is what I love, what I believe in, and it's almost like, for me, natural, like breathing. So it's basically this thing of, okay, step out and dare to say what you're doing or show. And the same happened with the poetry. During the rehearsals, I always bring a lot of stuff around, some things I'm sharing with my other people in the rehearsal studio, and others are just for myself. I have a lot of poetry at home, or like lyric. For a while, I was with Stefan George, also mm-hmm. one author I really love from the bottom of my heart, Rilke, and some others. And then I thought, like, okay, I don't know why it was like late at night, around 2 or 3 o'clock. And I just opened like my archive file on my computer. And then I don't know why I thought like, let's try this tomorrow. And then I gave the text to the others and they didn't even know who wrote that. Mm-hmm. I didn't tell them that it's my own text in the beginning. And it was not immediately also clear, this is my part, I'm doing it. I was sharing that, and we read that. We were also translating it for Hugo, who's not fluent in German. So we were also translating it to French, to English, talking about it, trying out stuff with it. And then actually in the end, I had also other material for myself. And then it was also this radical decision, no, I'm just doing those poems on stage. And I kicked out other texts that I had, and I also wrote one part of it, like one scene I wrote during the rehearsals, because when I'm in the flow, I wrote more, but I kept one. So yeah, it's kind of a practice that I'm reconnecting with. So this is something new I want to explore in the future, also to see writing also not as something that is just separated from other, because I'm not an author in the sense of I write and publish. Everything I do is always either coming on stage or staying in the rehearsal studio. So it's this two either or situation, but I never see myself writing in like, I write now a text and I publish it to the world. It's always to the life moment for me connected, because I would never dare to do a classical event where people just come and there's a desk in front and someone is reading mm-hmm. the text, which is this classical setting of mm-hmm. Lesung in German. Mm-hmm. And I would never dare to do this with my own text. But even though I would maybe like it, you know, this idea of dreaming about it, and theater allows me to...
It's like the guilty pleasure of yeah. like sharing your writing. Almost like sneaking it in, like staging a whole like show.
Only for to, like... but that's the secret.
Yeah, it's great.
No, I'm kidding, but yeah.
One other secret you have to kind of like reveal is, who's Mathieu?
Mathieu is the last name of Mireille Mathieu, which is a very famous French... singer, and she also did a lot of recordings in German. She's still alive. She's, I think, in her 80s now mm-hmm. or late 70s, and really an amazing singer. And she, I connect to her a lot because she comes also from a very poor family and from this overcrowded life situation, living situation. So, and she recorded songs, I think, in 8 languages. It's insane. But, and she's really very good in every language. Mm. It's not just, like, ah, someone tries. And in 2018, I always go for walks every day. And this is also one of my daily rituals. I'm a pedestrian. I love to stroll around, to observe people, and to really see what's going on in daily life. I have usually always my headphones on, walking through the streets, and then I pass by Konzerthaus in Vienna, mm-hmm. and there was a concert of Mireille Mathieu. And it was like 1 hour before the show started, so I got like a last-minute ticket, and I went there, and I was amazed in the big venue of Konzerthaus, and it was amazing because all these people, and they were like not just old people who grew up with Mireille Mathieu because she became big in the 60s, but really a lot of young people and a lot of also gay and queer people. And I was amazed because she did all her songs and they were so the whole space was flooded with emotions. Mm-hmm. And after every song, there were like, I don't know, 10 to 20 people were coming to the front of the stage and handing over flowers. Mm-hmm. So there was a mountain of flowers growing and the entire show was 3 hours because always these delays. And then people were really not stopping applauding. So she gave 3 extras and I was mind blown and I cried and everything. And because the songs of Mireille Mathieu in German are very like this kitschy, happy world songs, while her French songs are more deep. And one famous song of her is in German, Es geht mir gut, merci, chérie. Es geht mir gut, das macht die Liebe. And if you repeat that, it becomes really like a dark thing. And if you have that on loop for an hour or two, and I did that in the rehearsal studio, that we were listening to this kind of happy, happy song for 3 hours, you go insane. And so this is the kind of reference that, Mathieu ended up as a name. And I hate to find names for my shows. I got asked, why didn't you call the piece Dark Schlager? I remember it was in the process of applying for fundings. The jury asked me, why don't you call it Dark Schlager? And then I said, like, yeah, for me, then it would be too much about the Schlager, and it's actually not. And I like to have riddles and a bit of things that you don't need to understand everything.
Lastly, perhaps, what are you working on right now?
I'm preparing, actually, there's a lot of confusion, because in my head I have ideas for 4 different pieces. Mm-hmm. And the deadline is coming up for applying for fundings on the 15th of September. And basically there are 2 ideas that are very, I don't know, like something that is all already very graspable. I will continue in my own way of Tanztheater to really go in this direction and in this tradition also, because I think it's worth that we have such a great heritage that was done not just by Pina Bausch but by many others, especially like in Germany. And I think it's interesting for me personally to continue in that way, to develop my own, or to continue developing my own language in that sense, where I really, yeah, I can breathe, I can think, I can exist. And I'm very happy that in this year's attention, it was so rich and full of different, not just topics that people were dealing with, but the artistic language was so diverse. And I really found that super beautiful makes me super happy to got to know all of those beautiful artists and to also, see that there's not just one trendy way of doing dance, but there are many beautiful ways. And yeah, I'm grateful that Impulstanz showed that.
Thank you for being a part of it.
Kaleidoscope.
And thank you for talking to me.
Yes.
And I hope you get to sort some more things out and I don't know, rest a bit before the next. I feel like it's always like the next festival is already starting for
me. Yes, and I'm looking forward.
Yeah.
I'm already.
No, me too, actually.
I'm slowly getting ready to.
You have been listening to the podcast of the Attention Young Choreographer series. For more artist conversations, visit the websites lifelongburning.eu and impulsetanz.com.